Today, we'd like to remember Richard Pryor, who passed away on Saturday. Pryor broke ranks with many black comedians who came before him. He used his wicked wit to expose the raw realities of African-American humor and to battle discrimination, police brutality, and racism. In between the laughs and the tears, he taught many of us about each other and ourselves. How did Richard Pryor affect you? Did he change the way you saw yourself, your family, your country? Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And to help us, we turn to Mel Watkins, the author of On the Real Side, A History of African-American Comedy, and also, more recently, Step and Fetch It, The Life and Times of Lincoln Perry. And he joins us from his home in New York. And nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
It's great being back.
Words like a revolutionary and genius are being used to describe Richard Pryor. Would you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly. He brought something new into the onto the comic stage, and his influence is going to be felt for some time because he broke ranks, as you said earlier, with not only black comedians, but most all comedians of that time. But his influence goes far beyond just the comic. It goes onto various aspects of entertainment, or various fields in entertainment, because he allowed for a more uninhibited display, which sometimes not all for the good, has taken over the nation's pop culture. But he certainly was the stimulant for that.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of Richard Pryor. Here he is on the Ed Sullivan Show, acting out the part of an angry black poet.
Now I would like to introduce a black poet who's been called an angry poet by the masses, but he's our brother and is going to tell it like it is. Brother T.J. Majora. Right on, bro. Thank you. My first poem, if I may. Black! Now, for my second poem. This was a change by the establishment, as most black artists work are changed. Hi diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle and the cow jumped all over the moon. Now a lot of you out there probably doubt this coming from a black man, but if a white man was to stand up here and tell you, you might believe it. And that's what we got to do, brothers and sisters. We got to get together and organize ourselves against Whitey, because if we don't, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. Now, a lot of you out there, you're saying to yourselves right now, well, if you feel that way about white people, how come you're married to a white woman? They ain't got nothing to do with it.
Richard Pryor on the Ed Sullivan Show. And Mel Watkins, obviously, he's poking fun at himself and of course, American society. And that's not as simple as it sounds, is it?
No, it isn't. And the reason he was so successful, the reason he was so popular, is that he did it in such a good-spirited way that people were able to accept it. He also poked fun at himself, and that is something that some of the people who followed him have forgotten, because as a comic, you have to make people laugh both with you and at you. And he was capable of doing that at the same time he was delivering his social commentary and making the quips about the society and what was wrong with it or what was right with it in some cases.
He was, if I could say this, he was righteous without being self-righteous.
Right. Absolutely true. And one of the things that I thought about him is that he did. He took the comedy of Cosby, Gregory, and Flip Wilson, and sort of incorporated into one figure himself, mm-hmm. and made it work, because he took Gregory's social commentary and wit, he took Cosby's ability to tell stories, and he took Flip Wilson's love and enthusiastic embracement of black culture, and he embodied it in one person in such a way that people had to enjoy it. And it's unique. He was, in fact, this uniting the black style, the black vernacular style from the depths of the ghetto with substance was something that had not been done. And he was also the first black comic to speak to integrated mainstream audiences the way that black people joke among themselves, and that's where he really distinguished himself.
Of course, we want to give you listeners an opportunity to join us with your observations about the life and the death of Richard Pryor over the weekend at the age of 65. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Kevin. Kevin's calling us from Warsaw in Indiana.
Hi.
Hi.
What I'd just like to say is that the best thing that about Richard Pryor was he didn't really depict any kind of racial into his comedy. It was more or less a cultural experience for everybody to open their eyes to. And how no matter what kind of poverty that you were in, there's a way that you can laugh about what situation that you're in.
Well, let me ask Mel Watkins, who knows more about it than I do, but it certainly seems that he was talking about race, but also about a lot of universal things, too.
Well, he talked about race. I think that the listeners' commentary is correct and slightly off base in one sense. He talked about race, but he did it in such a way that he allowed everyone to become involved in it. So he did not separate the two. That's because he was able to laugh at himself, and he would turn the joke back onto himself all the time. So he brought everyone in, and you could see the humanity of the characters he created, because whether they be black or white, the wino and the junkie were people that most of us have all known at some time during our lives, and that's the part that drew people in and made it seem as if it were not just about race, it was universal.
Kevin, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Richard Pryor affected all of us, but probably no group of people more so than comedians. And joining us now on the phone is Lily Tomlin. Lily Tomlin, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi. Happy to be talking with you.
You must have known Richard Pryor.
I knew him because I adored him. He was on my first two television specials and in 1973. And when I was able to get specials ordered, the first thing I went after was Richard, and because I'd been a fan of his for a long, long time. And he was, I guess he had already shot Lady Sings the Blues, but he was waiting, the movie wasn't finished or out yet. The first special we did, they were both in 73. And I had to kind of prove, you know, I wanted him to know that that I was at least somewhat worthy of performing with him. So I would go down to the old neighborhood with him, and of course because of Laugh-In, a lot of people in the neighborhood knew me, and he liked that because the people were affectionate toward me.
Hmm.
And then he made me go to a porno movie with him, and I said I'm going to pay my own way, and I don't know. He was just an adorable, incredibly gifted guy, you know, artist.
Was he one of those performers that other performers would watch?
Oh yeah, I mean, well, just as a human, you watched him. It didn't matter. He was revelatory. So he, you know, what was astonishing about Richard, aside from just being as funny and moving as he possibly could be in one stroke, you know, most of the comedy today emanates from some kind of ridicule, which is in its own way a kind of violence and oppression. And Richard's comedy did not oppress; it only liberated, because that kind of laughter that comes from that from liberation or freeing up the soul, the interior is what makes us lose fear.
His character on stage, now obviously he was in a lot of movies as well as obviously a lot of TV shows, including yours. But that character we saw on stage, was that Richard Pryor in real life at all?
Yeah, to a large extent, absolutely. I mean, it's a side of him, you know, that a big side of him, a big part of him. Yeah, he was pretty much what you see is what you get. I remember I asked him to do the human rights campaign benefit that was at the Hollywood Bowl in 78. The people who were producing it asked me if I could get Richard, and I said, yeah, but you know, if you get Richard, you're going to get Richard. and that was the night he acted up, and because there was so much, but it's a complicated psychological night. I mean, it was predominantly white, And there were even, you know, there was a troupe of ballet dancers, white classical ballet dancers doing ballet on stage, and that was sort of, I mean, he didn't say this to me, but he was there with a bunch of guys, you know, from his life, and the Lockers were there with Tony Basil, and they were one of the first kind of, you know, break dancing groups, but probably not from the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of, and at that time, the human rights campaign was not identified as gay rights, even though everybody knew it was, but because it was in the 70s, it was, and human rights, as it should be, was the sort of the umbrella, but it was the umbrella to be able to draw more people to it so that people weren't and didn't feel stigmatized by calling it simply gay rights and so on. Human rights, it was a big, encompassing, including group. And that's the night Richard, it wound off. It started up with Richard came out on stage because I don't think he felt betrayed by me, even though I had invited him there. But whatever happened, whatever was going on in his life, though maybe I shouldn't have said that.
You didn't.
I didn't, okay. Anyway, he came out on stage, and that was the night he left the stage with saying, "You can kiss my rich black ass." And everybody was in an uproar, you know, and I thought it was incredibly liberating and freeing and not such a drastic thing, but of course everybody went a little nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, Richard was just the powerful, incredible, hurt, vulnerable person that he was.
We're talking with comedian, actress and playwright Lily Tomlin and with author Mel Watkins about comedian Richard Pryor, who died over the weekend. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Lily Tomlin, let me ask you something.
Well, I think the biggest point I want to make about Richard is that his humanity was so huge, and most comedy today precludes humanity, and it's more divisive,
mm-hmm.
more ridiculing,
yeah.
and as sharp and deep and incisive and human and real as his comedy was, it did not ridicule, it did not oppress, it totally liberated.
Mel Watkins, you were making that point earlier. Yeah.
What goes on?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lily is absolutely right about the humanitarian nature of his comedy. The fact is that he was so popular because people could see that even when he was being critical of anything, that there was a love there and there was a vulnerability there that allowed you in. He was acting as a human being, and his characters that he created, very human characters, and you knew that. So there was an edge of tragedy to the comedy.
Right.
But it did not ridicule, as you're pointing out, Lily. And I think that's a very important factor. That's why people loved him so much.
Lily Tomlin,
that kind of laughter is revolutionary.
Lily Tomlin, thanks very much for being with us today.
I'm glad you're doing a tribute to Richard. He was the total best.
He was.
Appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Matt. Matt's calling us from Oakland in California.
Good morning. Or afternoon, I suppose it is.
Depending where you are.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about one of Richard's stranger moments, which is, as I understand it, he was giving a performance in Las Vegas and stopped for a moment, took a long look at the audience, basically said something along the lines of, "What the hell am I doing here?" and then walked off. Do you know what was running through his mind at that point?
That was the point in 1969 when he became fed up with doing what he called white bread humor and decided that those voices inside that he later talked about had to come out. And he really was tired of doing the kind of humor that he had been doing, which was based on Bill Cosby, basically. And he walked off the stage and really retired or went into hibernation for a year or so. He went to Berkeley, California, and that's when he started reading more, became involved with a lot of young black writers, and Malcolm X was among those people that he read. But he became much, much more involved in African-American history. And when he came back, he had decided that he would no longer hide the characters that he always said were dying to bust out of him. And
at that point, probably had a little more influence over his own career, I would assume.
He really didn't. When he first started doing the comedy that we know him for, no one would hire him. In fact, his manager suggested that he didn't do it, and he lost several engagements because of it. He started working at smaller black clubs because he felt it would be more acceptable among blacks. and finally worked his way up to the Apollo and did some stuff at the Improv downtown, which allows more free rein in comedy. And that's where the character-based comedy that we know him for was developed.
Matt, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Before we let you go, Mel Watkins, I'm afraid we only have a minute or so left,
okay.
But Richard Pryor certainly struggled with his own demons in late years, drugs, ill health. Do you think he realized the impact that he had, not just on humor, but on culture?
I think towards the end he may have. When he first did it, I think that he did not. I think that he was simply doing something he felt he had to do. The one thing about him, and he's repeatedly said this, is that he was honest in his comedy. He was honest in his presentations, and I think that's what it was. It was a matter of him deciding, I have to be real, I have to be honest. And when you are genuine in that way, people see it, and they understand it, and that's what made him as great as he was.
Mel Watkins, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Mel Watkins, author of On the Real Side, A History of African-American Comedy. And we were talking about Richard Pryor, who died this past weekend at the age of 65. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.